Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
You can actually walk this path and come to this conclusion. You can know that Christianity was an invention of the Romans. It was done to pacify their subjects.
Nowhere does the Bible teach that being a Christian means that your sinful desires go away.
The best I have is the feel of the water, the taste of the bread and wine, the words of the pastor forgiving me. And I simply have to trust the promise that's connected with those things.
You treat your pastor the way you treat Jesus. You make his life miserable, don't think it's because you love Jesus. You make your pastor's life miserable, it's because you hate God.
1 hour from now, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We have four soundbites to play for you, and then all you have to do is listen to the four soundbites, and then give us a call, send us an email, a Twitter, or visit our Facebook fan page, and vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last half hour of Issues Etc. These discoveries come on a regular basis, and almost every time a discovery is made, especially when it comes to human evolution, the story doesn't change. The story pretty much remains the same that evolutionists tell about human origins. Well, there was a skull discovered in 2005 that some are saying is going to change that story. What's the story they tell, and how will this skull change the evolutionist story? Joining us to talk about the discovery of an ancient skull and human evolution, Dr. David Menton, speaker and researcher for Answers in Genesis and associate professor emeritus of anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis. Dr. Menton, welcome back.
Well, good to be here.
There's a story that evolutionists have been telling about human evolution up to this point. What is that story, and how would the discovery of this skull in 2005 that we're hearing so much about in the news today potentially change that story?
Well, if you look at the whole overall pattern generally accepted by evolutionists, they would argue that humans split off from, or the creatures that became humans split off from those that formed today's apes about 5 million years ago. I, of course, don't accept these time frames or the evolution, but that's the story. And then, so ape-like creatures formed the apes we have today and the humans we have today, according to evolution, over a period of about 5 million years. But about 2 million years ago, according to evolutionists, we begin to see creatures which are no longer Australopithecines that are obviously ape-like creatures, like Lucy. About 2 million years ago, according to them, we begin to see creatures called Homo. That's our genus that we belong to, Homo sapiens. And then about 200,000 years ago, according to evolutionists, we get Homo sapiens, essentially modern man. What this discovery purports is there were several different species of Homo before you get to Homo sapiens, and this team is arguing that with these observations they have, that there was just really one species of Homo before Homo sapiens. I guess you could lump it together in what we would call Homo erectus, for example. Other names with Homo: you have Homo rudolfensis, Homo ergaster, Homo heidelbergensis, Homo neanderthalensis. I'm going to have to learn more about what the claims are, but it sounds like at least a few of these, if not all of them, are now being lumped together. And that would mean that humans are pretty monotypic. Now, we know that anyway. For example, how many species of humans are there today? One. How many subspecies of humans are there today? One. We are called Homo sapiens, subspecies sapiens. Compare that, for example, to the foxes. There's about 25 different species of fox, and if you just take the red fox alone, there are 45 subspecies certainly capable of interbreeding. So you look at humans, and we're pretty unusual compared to most other creatures. We're just one species, which is exactly what I would expect if indeed, as we believe we have, We are all descendants of Eve, of Adam and Eve, and it makes sense that we'd be one species. Now evolutionists say that there were few or possibly only one species of Homo before Homo sapiens. I would think we were Homo sapiens all the way through and that we didn't evolve.
A couple of things that appeared in the news reports that I found kind of interesting and I wanted to ask you about. One is kind of a brief description from Dr. Ponce de Leon, who is one of the principals in this discovery, of the skull itself, apparently a relatively intact full skull. He says it has, quote, a strange combination of features described as a relatively flat, long, and massive brows, projecting jaw, and big teeth. Now, he says that those features represent a progenitor to human beings. What do those features on a skull tell you?
Well, you know, the only thing I've read on this is basically the Wall Street Journal report. I haven't had access to the science magazine that it's published in. So, you know, I'll really want to look with more detail. One of the things that intrigues me right off the bat is this is one of five skulls that apparently have been found in this location in the country of Georgia. And at least four of the five are pretty complete, one being that of a juvenile or infant. But the thing that's intriguing is it would appear to me all we have is skulls. Where's the rest of the body? Where are the rest of the bones? One of the comments in the Wall Street Journal article is that they have this evidence that these creatures walked in an upright pattern just as man does. How does one determine how a skull walks? You know, if you don't have the other bones to go with it, you can look at the position of the foramen magnum where the spinal cord goes up into the skull and see whether it's a little more anterior or posterior, assuming it's intact. But we're getting a lot of speculation here for skulls. The other thing they're arguing is all these skulls are related, and the reason they say they're all related, although they don't look the same, that's for sure. I'm looking at a picture of all five lined up in a row right now, of which only one is being talked about in the current news releases. But these have been found over the last several years, and they have been found in what is called one location in the country of Georgia, and they're supposed to represent the oldest hominids out of, you know, that have left Africa and are now in the Caucasus area. And when I look at the skulls, I just don't see how they can claim that they're all, you know, sufficiently similar, similar to, say, humans today, looking from one skull to another. The range of variation within our species, they say, is no greater than these skulls. But one of the five looks distinctly human to me. The others are pretty questionable, and I'll reserve judgment on that. The most recent one has just massive tooth roots that protrude from the front of the face, unlike the other four skulls. And I'm going to reserve judgment on that. I want to look at the, you know, the original papers. But why is it we just have skulls, five skulls and no bodies? And how do they know how they walked?
So what you're telling us in a nutshell there is that if provided only with the features of a skull or even five skulls, apart from any other bones of the body, it really is impossible for them to say that these are creatures that walked upright, the length of their legs or of their arms, all claims being made in the news today.
Well, they would certainly be rather extreme guesstimates. I mean, if you don't have any of the other bones, now I'll have to look at the original papers to see if indeed there were at least a few bones found. The interesting thing is that they have found stone tools, and I think stone tools are usually unambiguous. You can tell just a randomly fractured rock from a rock that's a stone that's been worked to cut or shave or chop or whatever. But, you know, just because you find stone tools in association with, say, some primate skulls, it doesn't mean that the primate that you find is the one that made the tool. Imagine if a local state park were dug into 10,000 years from now after it's all covered over with land and everything, and they put a drill down to find out what kind of creatures lived 10,000 years ago, and they happened to go into a garbage can in a local state park, and they found plastic spoons and chicken bones. Could we conclude that those chickens or those bones of the chicken were the ones that made the tools? You know, not necessarily. So I don't think we can be sure that the skulls that we've picked up are necessarily the creatures that made the tools. I'm prepared, just looking at one of the picture, or at the picture of one of the five skulls, to say it certainly seems to have the flat face of a human. But if you look at the most recent one they found, the jaw is positively massive. And from what I can read so far, they're claiming that it shows a great deal of arthritic change. So, you know, if we've got a lot of, bone pathology going on here, that complicates the interpretation of these specimens, too. But I would just focus on the fact for our Christian listenership that we human beings are just one species and one subspecies, that's relatively unusual among creatures to be just monotypic, one single species. It's what we would expect from the creation account. I believe Jesus was Homo sapiens. I believe Noah was Homo sapiens. I believe Adam was Homo sapiens. But, of course, evolutionists would like to have a whole chain of other Homo creatures. Now it would appear that they're willing to reduce this to perhaps only one before Homo sapiens.
Dr. David Menton is a speaker and researcher for Answers in Genesis. He's Associate Professor Emeritus of Anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis. Dr. Menton, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure.
You'll find a link to Answers in Genesis under the Listen on Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to delve into the life, the times, and the marriage and the home life of Katie Luther, the wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther. Professor Mark DeGarmo will be our guest. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Continuing education for the Confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Arch Fitness of Greater St. Louis has a new fall schedule for adult boot camps and sports performance training classes. There's plenty of flexibility with workouts on weekday mornings, weekday evenings, or even Saturday mornings. Arch Fitness has a new, bigger location at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Issues Etc. Reformation Week begins October 21st. 5 days of Reformation-themed programs with some of your favorite guests. And here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Reformation Week. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Reformation Week bulletin insert. We have five different bulletin inserts for each time zone. Issues Etc. Reformation Week.